Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It was a big moment for a show that opened up a world to a lot of new admirers. Earlier this month, MJ Rodriguez became the first transgender actress to win a Golden Globe for her role as Blanca, a house mother on FX's Pose, a fictional drama that spotlights New York's underground ball culture. This is Blanca explaining to a teenage gay kid disowned by his parents what a ball exactly is.
So what exactly is a ball?
Balls are a gathering of people who are not welcome to gather anywhere else. A celebration of a life that the rest of the world does not deem worthy of celebration. There are categories. People dress up for them. Walk. There's voting, trophies.
Oh, can you make money?
Better than money. You can actually make a name for yourself by winning a trophy or two. In an owl community, the glory of your name is everything. Now, we're not going to be walking the red carpets at the Oscars, but this is our moment to become a star. Welcome to the ballroom world.
Ballroom historian Ricky Tucker's new book, and the category is, serves the nonfiction realness of ball culture, tracking the importance of balls through the Harlem Renaissance until now. The book highlights Vogue icons, analyzes moments of representation and appropriation. Yeah, that's you, Madonna. And talks about some of the core values of ballroom culture. Author Bevy Smith said of the book, Ricky Tucker explores how ballroom's language, fashion, and family structure permeated pop culture for decades. He takes us beyond the watered-down, sanitized version we see in corporate and campaigns and on TV shows to give us the history, the black, queer, often marginalized origins of our culture, the definitive book on ballroom's legacy. Ricky Tucker is an essayist, a teacher, and an art critic. His book, and the category is Inside New York's Vogue House and Ballroom Community, is out today. Ricky, welcome to the show.
Allison, thank you so much. It was a direct request to be here with you today, so I'm like over the...
We're so happy to have you. And hey, listeners, we want to get you in on this conversation if you're feeling it. Do you belong to a house in New York City? How often do you compete in balls? What category do you like to walk in? Or maybe you've just attended a ball or a Vogue competition. What were your favorite performers? Or if you're someone who does participate in ball culture, what does it mean to you? Feel free to give us a call, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or you can always hit us up on social media, at All of It WNYC. That is Twitter and Instagram. All right, when you sit down and take on a subject like this, what kind of concerns and considerations did you have when you sat down and really started this project?
Well, before I even started, I had my mentors from the ballroom community sort of sanction it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been a fan for, you know, a couple of decades of the culture, but my real sort of engagement with the community, theoretically and person to person, was in a class called Vogology at the New School where I did my undergrad for writing. And so I've been sort of researching this book for 10 years. So in terms of, you know, formally, how did I start? I'd already started for 10 years and been doing research and just didn't really know it until the opportunity showed up. But the mandate from my two gay fathers, as we call them, my two house fathers, Michael mm-hmm. Roberson and Robert Simber, was that it be unapologetically black, which, you know, I am black, so my first instinct was, how dare you, but okay. And the second one was was an indictment of capitalism, which, you know, I come from a radical background, mm-hmm. Punk rock scenes in North Carolina and Boston, so that was no problem for me. But it was a tricky sort of balance, you know, taking people like you sort of mentioned Madonna to task without being one-sided about it. And really the thesis of the book is that ballroom is complicated and a paradox like everything else on earth.
So the book does a really great job of highlighting the modern icons of ballroom, but also the history of it. I'd like to start a little bit with the historical and we'll sort of work our way through. What can you tell us about its foundations in New York City? Where did that begin?
So it began up in Harlem around the turn of the 19th century with drag balls. So there were a group of mostly black men at the time, and some of them might have been actually trans people, we just didn't have that terminology back then, who were referred to as odd fellows. They had a lodge, and they would hold annual and sometimes more than annual drag balls. And it's funny how, looking back at all of this information about the balls back then, over a century ago, they mimic a lot of what we're still doing to this day. So it's, you know, folks of color dressing up in the opposite gender, and then a white audience sort of voyeuring the whole thing, right? And so there was folks coming from downtown Manhattan up to Harlem to be viewers of this, what was referred to as a spectacle at that point. And it is still sort of a spectacle, but I think ownership of that has changed across time.
Yeah, in the book, you write about this intersection of the balls and the Harlem Renaissance, and you found this great passage from Langston Hughes. I would love if you would read the passage for us and then read in between the lines in the passage for us.
Totally. Okay, so Langston Hughes says about the balls up in Harlem, he says, "Strangest and gaudiest of all Harlem spectacles in the 20s, and still the strangest and gaudiest, is the annual Hamilton Club Lodge Ball at Rockland Palace Casino. I once attended as a guest of Alayla Walker. It is the ball where men dress as women and women dress as men. During the height of the Negro era and the tourist invasion of Harlem, it was fashionable for the intelligentsia and social leaders of both Harlem and the downtown area to occupy boxes at this ball and look down from above at the queerly assorted throng on the dancing floor, males in flowing gowns and feathered headdresses and females in tuxedos and box-back suits."
All right, read between the lines for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he goes on a little bit further in that passage, and it's really just a paragraph or two, but he starts to talk about how some of the queens there, and he refers to them as queens, some of the queens there sort of have been wearing the same garments for years, and some of them are aging, and isn't that just sort of unfortunate? And, you know, there's a lot of back and forth across time about whether or not Langston Hughes was a queer black poet of the Harlem Renaissance, and there's a lot of gray matter about that. Like, we sort of don't know either way. There's evidence in either direction, but what strikes me is that in the language further in this passage that he ends up using, a lot of it is just sort of certifiably queer. You know, the terminology queens, and he kind of throws a little bit of shade, and like he's sort of talked about how they've reached their expiration date, and I'm not sure if someone who is entirely straight, or at least straight in their lexicon, would go so far as to use such language. So it was really interesting to me that it seemed like he at least culturally identified with ballroom, if not being a real member of it.
My guest is Ricky Tucker. The name of his book is And the Category Is: Inside New York's Vogue, House, and Ballroom Community. We have a call on line one. TK calling in from Rockland County. Hi, TK. Thanks for calling in.
Afternoon, Allison.
Good afternoon.
As you guys can hear, I have a deep voice. So most of the time when I call Brian, they assume I'm a male, and I'm not going to embarrass him by saying otherwise. The issue, though, is I have a question. Is the House of Omni still around? Do you guys know?
I've talked to a couple of people who are part of the House of Omni, and I think a really good way to look up folks in that family lineage is to look on Instagram, because a lot of folks put their house name in their handle. So there's some Omni still kicking around for sure.
Okay, great. Now that's my story. So I was dating a woman, I guess in the 90s, if not aging myself too much. She was always asking me to come to a ball because that was her thing. She did ball walks, and she had a lot of trophies, and a couple of times, you know, when they did have $50 or $100, it was never big money. It was always just the rights to say I won, that I'm the best looking, the best walking, the best whatever. Okay, so she finally got me to go, and I went. And she didn't win that night, but I won Best Dyke, which I thought was hilarious because I did not come to walk.
Oh, no.
I did not walk. They asked me to walk.
You just
and
took
I told
it.
Them, hey, I, I walk every day. Every day I stand out, I walk. I wear my clothes. I cannot hide. I am not one of those, you know, we have people that can hide. I'm not one of those. It's just like being black. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you cannot hide. I'm one of those.
Right.
So when they would say to me, hey, you going to walk or what? Because you look great. And I'm like, no, I walk every day. And they're like, well, honey, you just walked in here. So they calling my name, and people, you know, by your applause or hurrahs or however it goes.
Oh, my. Ricky, I want you to dive in here. So tell me your reaction to TK's story. TK, first of all, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you, CK. My reaction to that is, like everything in ballroom, like I was talking about paradoxes before, everything is an applaud and a read, right? Like, you didn't even come there to walk, but they're like, oh, Beth Dyke, right? Like, it's like they just put in front of the crowd and they're like, we see you and this is who you are, and congratulations, right? I love that. That's a great story.
Ricky, you write about the 1968 documentary film The Queen, directed by Frank Simon and narrated by the performer Flawless Sabrina. So what does this film show us about the experiences of New York's queens?
Well, that moment in The Queen has been the genesis moment, sort of the big bang of the modern house system was in that film through Crystal LaBeija, which has sort of been covered a little bit, you know, on the quiz show segment that they do on RuPaul's Drag Race. I think somebody won the segment by pretending to be Crystal LaBeija, and all of her indignance about not winning the category of head queen in that competition. She was Miss Manhattan, a woman of color, and the person that won, she felt Harlow was not good enough to win the prize, and she made that known. And at the time, Flawless Sabrina, who I met later on, shortly before her death, wonderful person, but she thought she was sort of showing her colors, which is a really interesting way to put that, you know, being indignant about what she thought was sort of racial discrimination that she'd seen, Crystal had seen across time as being in these pageants. And so she decided that day that she had had enough, and she went up to Harlem and started having balls that were just for people of color. And that was when the House of LaBeija was born, and that was the first house that created the modern house system.
We actually have a clip from that film, the moment you're talking about, where Crystal LaBeija placed fourth and then stormed off the stage, saying the context was fixed in favor of a white contestant. Mm-hmm. She goes on to confront Flawless Sabrina, who's the mistress of ceremonies. Let's listen to this clip.
She is not beautiful, has no qualification, and she's
think
body
she
deserved
it? Did you think she deserved
Darling,
it?
She didn't deserve
Answer
nothing.
Answer me. You're not speaking from the damn camera. You have a mind. Do you think she deserved it?
You know she didn't deserve it. All of them, the judges knew it too. But she was terrible.
No, she
and her explanation for why she wanted the money to put it in the bank. She's not getting any money because Sabrina is not going to pay her. They're good friends. It's only publicity, and it's bad publicity for Holland and all the rest, because I'm declared as one of the uglier people of the world.
And next time she should drop her outfit off at the cleaners before she wears it on stage.
She better get the hell back to Philadelphia because she's one of the worst. And where's Miss Sabrina?
She had thoughts. She definitely had thoughts. My guess is Ricky Tucker, the name of the book is, and the category is. Some of today's modern Vogue icons are included in the book. Who are some names that you would like people to know, or that people should know who are interested in this?
Yeah, the folks that I've made these sort of baseball card, like collectible baseball ball card inserts in between chapters, because at one point I was like, there's a lot of theory here. There's a lot of history. I'm not a historian or a journalist, but I am somebody who loves talking about art. And so I just wanted to bring into the book the feeling of going to a ball. A lot of that is latching on to somebody who's the best voguer in the room, you know? And so I just wanted to sort of give just a fun baseball card collectible history of folks who I love. So one of them is Leomi Maldonado, who everybody knows now as a judge on Legendary. The sort of her trajectory as a pop icon was a rough one because she started out on America's Best Dance Crew as the only trans person on that show ever, one of the only trans people on modern television. And so you could sort of see her trials and tribulations cut to a few years later, her being the center focus of a Nike ad cut to her being a judge on Legendary. So I really wanted to show her for the queen that she was and that she is and how she kicked doors in. So I just sort of wrote a little ode to her. But there are tons of people. Jose Extravaganza danced with Madonna in the Vogue days and was on that Blonde Ambition tour. His work is outstanding and it's so youthful forever, infinitely cool the way that he vogues and combines ballet practice, modern dance, and hip hop and vogue to have a unique sort of point of view about the dance form.
All right, you brought up the M word, Madonna. You wrote about the use of Madonna's 1990 Vogue, we all remember. Let's listen to a clip of Madonna talking about her inspiration for Vogue. This is from 2019 from iHeartRadio.
Well, I mean, living in New York always makes me feel turnt. And I've been very inspired. I mean, the song Vogue, which you were playing earlier, was inspired by walking into a nightclub. It may have been the Paradise Garage, I'm not sure, but and seeing the Extravaganza crew basically voguing. And I was like, whoa, what the hell is that? And it was just the most amazing thing.
So 30 years after Madonna claimed voguing, how is that moment viewed by those in the ballroom scene? Is it appropriation, appreciation, exploitation, elevation, some combination?
You're rapping. I love it. What I found, like, you know, I ask a lot of questions in the book and I didn't get any answers really. It's just split 50-50. So it's another one of those paradoxes that you just have to sort of sit with in ballroom. Half the people think that she brought Vogue and ballroom up to the masses and up another level. And a lot of folks think that she exploited them. And even, you know, if you look at the documentary Strike a Pose, which features Jose Extravaganza and a lot of those dancers from that time, there's a hate love thing. It's like, we sued her, but we miss her, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just very complicated. I mean, even couched in within myself writing the book, it's like, I am describing David Fincher's music video for Vogue, and it's breathtaking, that video. It's gorgeous, you know? But the way that ballroom is represented is they're all her servants. Like, people are dusting off pillars and, like, dressed as butlers, and she is Marilyn Monroe in that bridge section where she's mentioning, you know, Greta Garbo, Monroe, Dietrich DiMaggio, all these straight white people from back in the day have, like, literally nothing to do with ballroom. So in the book, I swap out all of those names for, you know, Larry Ebony and all of the, and Keila Beja and all these folks who are actually the lineage and the stars of yesteryear and today of ballroom. So it's complicated. I love Madonna, but, you know, we grow in the ways in which we are able to represent cultures that are not ours. And back then will be different than today. Now we have Pose, and it'll hopefully get better from here on out, too.
The name of the book is And the Category Is Inside New York's Vogue House and Ballroom Community. It is by Ricky Tucker. Ricky, thank you for sharing your book with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Allison. This has been outstanding. Thank you.